Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, the kids are about to be home from school, and there's a chance, if they're like one of my kids, that they'll soon be a little bored with all that freedom on their hands. What a problem, right? Well, one way to deal with all that time is to grab a book and settle down for some good quality reading time, something we advocate often here at Up to Date. If the question is which book to read, we can help today as we survey a whole host of new books with our buddies from the Johnson County Public Library. Today, we'll survey books for preschoolers all the way up to teenagers, and our good Johnson County librarians are Kate McNair, who will give us some recommendations for young adults. And Kate, nice to have you back again.
Thanks.
Debbie McLeod will survey books for middle readers. Debbie, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. How are you?
And Dennis Ross will talk to us about books for very young readers and some of those in between as well. Dennis, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Well, Kate, talk to us about summer reading programs. This is about the time of year when parents start to engage their kids, to get them involved, and how's it going to work this year at the Johnson County Public Library?
Well, this year our summer reading program has an online component for all ages, so parents can participate with their kids. You can join adult summer reading, and you can keep track of what you're reading online.
So you don't have to come in and get the form like you used to have to do.
No, you can stop by, and you can have a library card, or if you don't have one, you can sign up without a library card. You can keep track of what you've read. Rate your books, write reviews, and collect badges all summer long to win prizes and show off what you've accomplished all summer. It's really great. I'm excited about it. I know Dennis is too. Mm-hmm. We've been making fun badges all summer.
And some kids, Dennis, really get into this, right? I mean, this is
especially the older ones. They're used to earning things that are similar to digital badges when they play games online, so it makes sense to them.
Yeah. And how many books will some kids read over the course of a summer?
Oh, gee whiz.
You know, kids.
Some of them will read two really big books, and some of them will turn in a completion report that says they read, 30 or 40. Just they're all different.
I have a teenager whose goal is to read 50 books over the summer.
Wow.
So
wow.
He's very ambitious.
That's impressive, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the website to get engaged with this is what?
www.jocolibrary.org/summer-reading.
Okay, easy enough to figure it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's go to some good books and some recommendations here. And by all means, if our listeners have recommendations, if by chance a kid is home and wants to call in with a good idea, we're all ears here. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. And Kate, let's start with a book, Landry Park.
Yeah, this is a great read for your middle school and high school readers who like Hunger Games and Divergent. It's dystopia with a local twist. It's by local author Bethany Hagen, and it's about Madeline Landry, who's posed to take over as the heir of Landry Park, which is the most influential property in Kansas City. Her family has been credited with saving the Western world with the introduction of these radioactive lanterns that brought power and light to the world after it was destroyed by war. Madeline is expected to live up to her family's legacy, get married, and carry on the Landry legacy by having children and becoming one of the country's leaders. But she wants to go to college, and she wants to get an education and become a writer. Their lives are all turned upside down when, at a party, another upper-class girl, another debutante, is attacked, and she points the fingers at the ruthless, who are the lower-class people in this community. They dispose of the radioactive waste, which is basically a slow death sentence. Madeline believes that this girl is lying, and is worried about the rootless having to pay the price for this girl's lies. And she has to decide between following her father's dreams and keeping this hidden and becoming an heir to Landry Park, or following her conscience.
Mm, my goodness. And the local author is Bethany Hagen.
Yeah, it's really great if you travel around Kansas City. There's things like Swope Park is in the book, and Liberty Memorial plays a big role. And there's even a little mention of Excelsior Springs. So it's kind of fun to find the little Easter eggs that are hidden about this Kansas City far in the future.
Well, that book, again, is Landry Park by Bethany Hagen. And we'll get a complete list up on our website, kcur.org. Debbie McLeod, let's go to Revolution by Deborah Wiles. Reading range here, grades 5 through 8, roughly. Yeah,
that's correct. And this book is not even out yet. So be looking. It comes out next week.
So be looking for it. But this is the second book in Deborah Wiles' 60s trilogy. So those of us who grew up in the 60s, we can really identify with this. This takes place in the summer of 1964 in Greenwood, Mississippi, which is where they had the Summer of Freedom, where there was the big push to sign up African Americans to vote. And it tells the story of Sunny, and she's 12 years old, and life is wonderful. You know, she lives in this nice little southern town. They have their maid who comes and does everything for her, and her dad owns the local store, and her uncle and aunt have a, or her grandmother have this plantation where they, you know, harvest cotton. And the big excitement for her is that the Beatles are coming to the wow. United States. So you've got
this
the Beatles.
This is going back a ways, isn't
yes,
it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And what happens is all these, what they call agitators, start coming into Greenwood to start the registration for the vote. And Sunny's eyes are opened to this whole new way of thinking and way of life. Plus, she has to deal with her, she's got a new stepmother. And, you know, so dealing with the Beatles coming, which is exciting to her, but then these agitators and changing the way she's thinking and her relationship with her stepmother. It makes very good reading. And this is sort of like, you've heard of docudramas on TV. This is sort of like a docu-print book. In between the chapters, there are facts. And, you know, what was happening to tie what's happening in the story to what was happening historically at the time. Mm-hmm. And it really is very, very interesting.
I was going to say, this book, as we said, is for grades 5 through 8. What a tough age group to write for.
Yes, it
and
is.
And you say this book hits it pretty good.
Yes, it really does. And you can identify, I mean, she's going through all these changes herself. And then the whole country is changing. And it gives you facts about the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, you know, the freedom schools and everything, and ties it in with this character. So it makes it much more personable than if it was a straight nonfiction.
That's Revolution by Deborah Wiles. And let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Chandler from Lawrence. Chandler, welcome.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, thanks, Chandler.
I was calling because I'm about halfway through a book that I just found called Dorothy Must Die, and it's mm-hmm. a spinoff of The Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy left and she came back and got power hungry and took over everything, and Oz is crumbling. So another girl from Kansas gets magically transported again, kind of the same way, and Glinda's twin sister and a couple other, you know,
wow.
good witches have teamed up to help her take Dorothy down. So it's really interesting because, you know, everybody knows this sweet story about the Wizard of Oz, but this is like a total 180 on that. And I think like kids who like the Hunger Games or anything like that, it's kind of one of those like adventure, like, you know, strong female character books. I like it a lot.
And Kate, do you know that book?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's really popular.
It's brand new, too.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And, it just came out. Retellings are really big right now.
Yes.
There's a lot of retold
yeah.
fairy tales and stories and, mm-hmm. You know, rebooting of series. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's on my to-be-read list for sure.
Yeah, mine too.
That's Dorothy Must Die. Chandler, I'm sure glad you called. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, our number here, 816-235-2888. And Dennis Ross, tell us about The Mysterious Howling, The Incorrigible Children of Ashton Place, number one by Mary Rose Wood. This reading age, grades 5 through 8 again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, that would be for independent reading. This is just one of my recent very favorites. It's the first in a series called The Incorrigible Children of Ashton Place.
Mm.
And I've heard
kids
it described
like other
as,
kids who are incorrigible, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Well, somebody described it to me as Jane Eyre meets Lemony Snicket. I think it's more like Mary Poppins meets Lemony Snicket.
Mm-hmm.
The main character is this 15-year-old Miss Penelope Lumley, mm-hmm. and she's a recent graduate of the Swanburn Academy for Poor Bright Females. And she's hired as a governess at the very wealthy Ashton estate for these three children who had been raised by wolves and found in the woods. Mm-hmm. And adopted by the by Lord Ashton, so she has to try to turn them into civilized human beings in short order.
Yeah,
and, it's just very funny. It's very smartly written. It'd be wonderful to as a read aloud for younger children. And I listened to the CD audio in the car to be excellent for a road trip with the family.
That book again, The Mysterious Howling by Mary Rose Wood. How did you come across this book? I mean, how do librarians become aware of the different offerings that are coming
well,
down the pike?
Lots of ways. This one was like a lot of people was recommended by one of my colleagues. She said, "Oh, you haven't read that yet, or you would just love it."
Yeah,
and she was right.
And do you end up ordering these books for the library once you've read it and think, "Hey, this looks pretty good"?
I don't. We have a collections department that's in charge of that, but we certainly send them lots of recommendations.
Recommendations.
Yes.
You do that a lot. And Kate, you do that a lot too.
Oh, and they're normally on top of it.
Yeah,
I normally think that I've found like the next latest and greatest thing, and I email them, and they're like, oh, we already ordered 10 copies.
They know about
of them.
That. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. Kate, let's go to another book here, The Crossover by Kwame Alexander for 6th to 8th graders, roughly.
Yeah, this is a great novel in verse for your late elementary school, middle school reader who likes sports or poetry or even rap. It's about Josh Bell, who's known as Filthy McNasty when he's on the basketball court. He's one of the top two players in his middle school basketball team, and the other top player is his twin brother, Jordan. And the two are expected to become big stars, as their father was an amazing basketball player before he retired, known as Da Man to his fans. And Filthy and Jordan are ready for an epic year. They're going to go all the way to playoffs with their team, but things are complicated by a new girl who Jordan starts dating and a discovery about their father's heart problems. And this novel has such a unique voice. I knew that someone has to read this aloud because I love this story.
Well, speaking of reading it aloud, KCUR's Dan Margulies is going to read a little bit from The Crossover by Kwame Alexander. In fact, he has two readings from this book, I think.
Yeah, they're back to back, and you'll get a little sense of the voice in the book.
Dan, the microphone is yours.
Well, thank you, Steve. This first one is called Josh's Play-by-Play. It's game three for the 2-0 Wildcats. Number 17, Vondi Little, grabs it. Nothing little about that kid. The Wildcats have it, first play of the game. The hopes are high tonight at Reggie Lewis Junior High. We destroyed Hoover Middle last week, 32-4, and we won't stop, can't stop, till we claim the championship trophy. Vondia overhead passes me. I fling a quick chest pass to my twin brother, JB, number 23, a.k.a. the jumper. I've seen him launch it from 30 feet before, all net. That boy is special, and it doesn't hurt that Chuck Da Man Bell is his father, and mine too. JB bounces the ball back to me. JB's a shooter, but I'm sneaky and silky as a snake. And you thought my hair was long. I'm 6 feet, all legs. Oh, wow. Did you see that nasty crossover? Now you see why they call me Filthy. Folks, I hope you got your tickets, because I'm about to put on a show.
Pretty good, Dan.
Well, thank you, Steve. You know, I've never done slam poetry before, but it may be a new thing for me.
Yes.
I've got another one here called
Please.
The Show. A quick shoulder shake, a slick eye fake. Number 28 is way past late. He's reading me like a book, but I turn the page and watch him look, which can only mean I got him shook. His feet on the bank, and I'm the crook. Breaking, taking him to the left. Now he's took. Number 14 joins in. Now he's on the hook. I got two in my kitchen. I'm fixing to cook. Prepping my meal, ready for glass. Nobody's expecting Filthy to pass. I see Vondi under the hoop, so I serve him up my alley-oop.
A star is born. Dan Margulies reading from The Crossover by Kwame Alexander. Thank you, Dan. Great,
pleasure,
great
Steve.
Stuff there. That was pretty good. That was all right.
I love this book, and I think you're going to get a lot of people who maybe are tired of reading the assigned things from class and just want a total change, and this book is going to give it to them. It's really fast. It goes quick because it's in verse. It's great for everybody.
Okay. Again, The Crossover by Kwame Alexander. Debbie McLeod, let's go to Queen Victoria's Bathing Machine by Gloria Whelan.
Yes, this is something totally different. This is a picture book, and it's written in verse. And Gloria Whelan does a lot of historical fiction, and this is one of the few times that she's gone into the picture book area. And everyone thinks of Queen Victoria as this staid, conservative, dowager-type woman. But this takes place when she's very young, new to the throne. She has little children. She loves Prince Albert, and she also loves to swim. And unfortunately, when you are royalty, especially the queen, you cannot let your subjects see you in your bathing suit.
Ah.
And what to do? So Prince Albert comes up with this idea to make a bathing machine. And it looks like a chicken coop on wheels. And it makes everybody happy. And in fact, at the end of the book, there's sort of like an afterword, and you see a picture of the bathing machine. It has been restored. And this is what Queen Elizabeth, she'd be hauled into the ocean. She could slip into this, into the ocean and swim and then slip back into it. And nobody was the wiser that she was in her little bathing suit.
Now, how would you come up with an idea like that? What a off the wall but interesting idea.
Yeah, he must have been a very innovative guy, this Prince Albert. You know, to come up with this idea, you know, how to make your wife happy and, you know, just something that was very appropriate for her stature in society.
Yeah. Again, that's Queen Victoria's Bathing Machine by Gloria Wellen, right?
Right.
High recommendation from Debbie McLeod. Okay. Dennis Ross, The Carpet People by Terry Pratchett.
Oh, yeah. This is another one.
Reading age grades 5 through 8.
Yeah. Recent favorites. Terry Pratchett, very well known and very widely honored. In fact, he's Sir Terry Pratchett now and somewhat elderly. And The Carpet People was originally published in 1971, and this is a new edition. It's been revised. It has updated text, lots of illustrations that he did at the time. It's a very pretty gift-worthy book, and it's just a fun story. There's the world is the carpet, and very extremely, extremely tiny people and creatures live in the carpet. There's many different tribes, and there's all kinds of different creatures. There's the Frey, which sounds a lot to me like a vacuum cleaner maybe going overhead that sweeps a trail of destruction across the carpet. And there are wild snargs on the prowl. And there's this tribe called the Munrungs who have known peace for decades, but now the world is changing and there's vicious moles and other kind of creatures that are hungry for power. And so the world is very upset and in peril.
And the really scary thing is here, there's probably some scientific proof to what he's writing about here. Who knows what's in our carpets, right?
Right, right. I totally believe
you don't want
myself,
to know.
Yeah, it's really a very pretty book, too, and a lot of fun. And kind of takes you back to the origins of Terry Pratchett's writing.
Well, Nancy Cacambo from KCUR is going to read from The Carpet People by Terry Pratchett. Nancy.
Old Grim Orkson, chieftain of the Munrungs, had two sons. The eldest, Glurk, succeeded his father as chieftain when old Orkson died. To the Munrung way of thinking, which was a slow and deliberate way, there couldn't have been a better choice. Glurk looked just like a second edition of his father. From his broad shoulders to his great thick neck, the battering center of his strength. Glurk could throw a spear farther than anyone. He could wrestle with a snarg, and wore a necklace of their long yellow teeth to prove it. He could lift a horse with one hand, run all day without tiring, and creep up so close to a grazing animal that sometimes it would die of shock before he had time to raise his spear. Admittedly, he moved his lips when he was thinking, and the thoughts could be seen bumping against one another like dumplings in a stew. But he was not stupid. Not what you'd call stupid. His brain got there in the end. It just went the long way round. He's a man of few words, and he doesn't know what either of them means, people said, but not when he was within hearing.
That's Nancy Cacambo reading from The Carpet People by Terry Pratchett. Nancy, thanks so much. Appreciate
it.
That book again for grades 5 through 8. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, as we survey good books for kids to read this summer as our summer vacations are beginning. Something good for kids to do during these long summer months. Have such great memories of sitting around reading good books during the summertime. Sandra from Leawood, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Sandra.
I have a question.
Yes.
Somebody could recommend a book for a 12-year-old boy who does not like that the protagonist is always a girl. He's read Divergent, Hunger Games, all those, but he's tired of girls' protagonists. So he devoured the Percy Jackson series, for example. What would you recommend?
I would say The Maze Runner.
I think
that would be really good, and it's going to become a movie.
Mm-hmm. The Maze Runner.
The Maze Runner, yes. The first book, there's now four in the series, one of which is a prequel to the Maze Runner.
M-A-Z-E?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if you really like series, there's the Alex Rider books.
Hang on, Dennis. The author is
James Dashner is the author of The Maze Runner, and he has a new series out too.
Yes.
That's got an I can't remember the name of the first book, but it's like a hacker series. So if he likes kind of sci-fi stories, James Dashner has that one. And the movie for The Maze Runner comes out in September.
Right. And if you know, it might be that once he reads The Maze Runner, he likes this author, and he writes really good books where the boy is the protagonist. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Sandra, thank you. Good luck. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. Your recommendations for good books. Other parents listening right now might appreciate a good recommendation or two. Okay, Kate McNair, let's move on to The Impossible Knife of Memory by Laurie Hulse Anderson.
This is a timely novel for high schoolers that is about post-traumatic stress, and it'd be great for fans of John Green or Sarah Dessen. It's about Haley. She's just moved back to her father's hometown with him after he comes home from war in Iraq, and she calls home one day from school, and no one answers by the second ring, and she figures her dad's sleeping. No one picks up by the 10th ring, and she hopes that maybe he's out mowing the lawn, but when no one picks up by the 20th ring, she knows she has to get home. So she begs a ride from the editor of the school newspaper, who's been trying to get her to write for the paper for a while. And as he's driving her home, she starts to have a panic attack. And she jumps out of the car at an intersection. She runs home, and she finds her dad on the floor, unconscious. Mm. He's drunk, but at least he's breathing.
Mm.
Her father came home from war recently, but his head is still full of the sand and blood and bombs of Iraq. And he's unable to escape the PTSD that haunts him. He medicates with drugs and alcohol and violence, and Haley's trying to take care of both herself and her father while her best friend's family splits apart from divorce. Her alcoholic stepmother comes back into the picture, and the school newspaper editor asks her out on a date.
Hmm, my goodness. Again, that book is The Impossible Knife of Memory. Laurie Hulse Anderson is the author. Lots of recommendations coming in here. You can send them to us up-to-date at kcur.org or tweet us at kcurup-to-date. One here from Ellie, she sends a picture of Helen Hancock's Penguin in Peril. Do we know that book, Penguin in Peril?
I
gather it's for young kids.
Mm-hmm.
Trisha sends us an email with these recommendations.
Oh.
Here comes the Easter Cat.
Yes,
Deborah Underwood,
one.
The Most Magnificent Thing. Ashley Spires, The Animal Book, a collection of the fastest, fiercest, toughest, cleverest, shyest, and most surprising animals on Earth. Go librarian, she writes. Is that our Trisha?
Yes.
From your library?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here comes the Easter Cat, again, one of her recommendations. Okay, Debbie, The Ghosts of Tupelo Landing.
Well, this is by Sheila Turnage, and this is for that middle school, or that middle range, 4th through 6th grade. And this is the sequel in which of the first Tupelo Landing book. And in this one, you have young Beau LeBeau, and she and her guardians run the local cafe. And it just so happens that an old inn that has been abandoned for years is going to be up for auction because they just want to get rid of this eyesore. And they are catering the event. And all these strange people start showing up. And you've got Mo, who really thinks of herself as a mystery solver. And there's been rumors of ghosts in this inn. So she wants to solve that mystery, but she also wants to see who's going to buy this inn. And who is this strange group of people that are showing up for this auction? And the passage that we're going to read is where she's introduced to one of the new characters in town.
Well, KCUR's Cody Newell will read from The Ghosts of Tupelo Landing. Cody.
The boy from the car turned and walked towards us, barely whistling. From a distance, I didn't like him. Up close, I liked him less. Black hair, thin face, mole under his left eye, scuffed black shoes, cheap clothes put together to look like money. He walked up lanky as a coyote, his thin shoulders sloping a modicum to the left. At ease, you two! The colonel said as the boy scuffled to a halt. The boy's eyes drifted from the colonel to me to Dale. Crenshaw, he said, trying to make his voice low. Harm Crenshaw. Like he was Bond, James Bond. Give me a break. The third, Dale replied. Dale Earnhardt Johnson the third. And this is Lobo, Mo Lobo. And the colonel, I said before Dale could get tangled up. Crenshaw, Harm Crenshaw, nodded, not quite meeting our eyes. I need a ride to the auction, he said, shoving his hands deep in his pockets. Anybody going that way?
Cody Newell reading from The Ghosts of Tupelo Landing. Cody, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with a whole bunch of other good books for kids to read this summer. We're taking your recommendations at 816-235-2888. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking with our Johnson County librarians, Kate McNair, Debbie McLeod, and Dennis Ross, about lots of good books to read this summer. If parents are listening, here's your chance to get some good ideas to keep your kids occupied during the summer with something good to do, which is reading a book. And Dennis Ross, let's move on to Moonbird, A Year on the Wind with the Great Survivor, B95.
Yeah, this is my favorite nonfiction that I've read recently. It's a couple of years old. It's not brand new, but it's by Philip Hoos, who also has written other award-winning books. You know, a lot of kids would prefer to read a nonfiction book. You know, that doesn't always have to be a novel or a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like information, and this is just, it just captures your attention. You wouldn't think a whole book about one little bird or about birds in general would be that fascinating. But it's a story of this bird. They call him B95. That was his number when they caught him and tagged him. And he's a small little kind of a bird called a Rufa Knot.
I'm sorry, is it fiction or nonfiction?
It's nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And this is him on the cover.
Yeah.
You can all see what he looks
photograph
like.
Photograph of him.
Yeah.
What kind of bird is it?
It's called a Rufa Knot.
Ah.
He's very small. He's like, weighs 4 ounces. And he migrates from the southern tip of South America to Canada and back every year.
You are kidding me.
No.
A four-ounce bird does that.
Right, every year. And the scientists have named him Moonbird because he's amazingly lived at least 20 years so far.
Mm-hmm.
And it means he's flown at least the distance to the moon and halfway back already altogether, just for this tiny little bird. And so what the author has done is by capturing your attention, by you really care about this little guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really want to see what happens to him. And so then they tell us the whole story, the bigger story of bird migrations and habitat loss and other environmental pressures, and with interesting little sidebars
are
about
they
how
able
scientists
to,
work. And that,
the mm-hmm. scientists are able, Dennis, to track this particular bird?
They know where the stops are on this tremendously long migration route each way for these birds, and where they stop, they have to stop and refuel, and you know, every so often to fly that far. And so scientists wait, and with these big nets catch and measure and weigh and track them coming and going both.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know what he looks like. They know where the bands on his, he's got an orange band on one leg and a black band on the other leg. And so they know it's him when they see him.
Wow.
And it's just pretty amazing for some, you know, with all we think of all the dangers and the everything that can happen to you. How can he live that long?
Mm-hmm.
Migrating
or fly that long at that kind of size. That's just
amazing.
Yeah,
it's just,
to me.
And it's really, it's, pretty to look at, too. There's a lot of white space, a lot of beautiful color photo illustrations and maps and little interesting sidebars about how scientists work and how they develop those nets that are fired by cannons that can catch a whole bunch of birds on the beach without hurting them. And this book was written 2 years ago. I looked it up yesterday online, and he was sighted alive in December 2013.
So kidding.
He is still well over 20 years old.
That book interests me.
It's really a pretty fascinating book, yes.
Moonbird, A Year on the Wind with the Great Survivor, B95 by Philip Hoos, if I'm saying that right.
Yes, I guess.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, before we go on, what do we know about circulation and people showing up at the library? What are the numbers looking like these days, Kate? Dennis, any feel? What's happening?
Well,
people still reading books?
Yeah, and there's no really big swings back and forth. For a few years ago, it seemed to be that the circulation numbers, books being checked out, had dropped a little bit, but the number of people coming into the buildings had gone up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In the last year or so, it seems like maybe that's turned the other way around.
Yeah,
But they're not really big swings. But yes, people are checking out a lot of things, and they're checking out e-books too now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were all interested to see a national survey said something like 60% of people don't know that their library has e-books.
Really?
So we want to make sure that everybody in the Kansas City area knows that no matter what library system you go to here in the Kansas City area, they all have e-books that you can download from home for your e-reader, for your phone. And we have e-audiobooks, so if you're an audiobook listener, you can download those onto your device.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And how do they figure out the copyright on that? I mean, when the library buys an ebook, you can only check out that ebook so many times. Is that how
these are murky waters. Yes.
There's a ton of different rules. Mm-hmm. Some publishers give us like a year license, so we can check it out as many times as we want in a year. For some of them, it's a certain amount of checkouts. For some of them, they just give it to us, which would be nice. Fewer and fewer of them do that.
Yeah, it's still kind of crazy. They're still figuring their way out on this as far as what standard they are going to use, because each publisher wants his piece of the pie.
Yeah. Well, Debbie, you still judge for the Caldecott, or are you off that board now?
I'm done with the Newbery.
Newbery.
So now I'll go to Las Vegas, and we'll do the celebration and the giving of the medals. So,
I see. And it's your last time through.
You can only be on the year for 1 year at a time, excuse me, and then you have to wait 5 years before you can be on another award committee.
So the sense you get from, you know, younger folks not reading as much, your experience would suggest just to the contrary. People still are engaged and heavily engaged.
Well, and the news article that came out like 2 weeks ago that said that, at least there was one that said young adults don't read as much for pleasure. And I was curious that it was a very vague article that got a lot of press, but they didn't say, you know, are they still reading as much? I know a lot of the teens that I work with have to read a ton for school. They don't, you know, by the time they get home from soccer practice or whatever they've had after school and they've got to finish, you know, a book for history class and a book for English class and they've got reading to do for their biology class, they don't have the time or the energy to pick up a book. Yeah. So I think there's still a lot of reading going on. I just think there's a lot less choice that gets to happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting is sadly. That when I've been seeing with some teachers have been talking and how they want to have practical things. So the nonfiction, they're really pushing the nonfiction at the expense of fiction. So it'll be interesting to see where this all goes as far as, you know, what is going to be taught in the schools as far as literature, too.
That's interesting. Here's a good question from Greg, who writes us this at UpToDate@KCUR.org. I have a 7-year-old daughter who's finishing first grade tomorrow, and she has been devouring the Magic Treehouse books by Mary Pope Osborne over the last year. At her current pace, I'm worried that she'll be caught up with the series before our long drive for summer vacation. What would you recommend as the next series of books for her to move on to?
I would say, well, there's the A to Z mysteries, which are really very popular, and they're the same age range. And if she hasn't read the Junie B. Jones books by Barbara Park, those are just forever a classic. There's also Amelia Bedelia books that are now out in chapter books by Herman Parrish, and the Fancy Nancy, who's been very popular in the picture book crowd. There's also now chapter books of Fancy Nancy. So there's a whole number of series that they can go to, and she'll be well stocked for the rest of the summer.
Okay. Any other recommendations?
Say Hank the Cow Dog by John Erickson.
Oh, yeah, I've heard you talk
about that. That's a very long series, very funny books.
Hank the Cow Dog. Mm-hmm. I hope that helps with all that. Joanne also wrote with a question, recommendations for a 7-year-old boy who loves sports and numbers, loves facts books, National Geographic series, fun facts, Ripley's Believe It or Not, etc., but has a hard time getting into chapter books. He reads above grade level. I'm convinced that given the right book or series, he'd devour it. Suggestions?
I would say Matt Christopher.
For sports stories, yes.
Yeah, he's really good for sports stories. Tim Green has done some sports books. Cal Ripken has a nice series of they're a little bit more difficult, but if he has the desire to read, and if he's a good reader, he would like that.
It's Cal Ripken, the baseball Hall of Famer.
Cal Ripken, right. Yes. Yeah. Also, Kiki Barber has and his brother have done a series of sports stories, and they know the sports. So, you know, you can bet that all that information in sports that are included in the fiction book would be good.
Yeah, there's some very entertaining books by Dan Gutman called the Baseball Card Mysteries. But I would also say, you know, remember that nonfiction is reading. Some people just prefer that.
Like me. That's it. Yeah. Okay. Kate McNair, let's move on here. These Broken Stars by Amy Kaufman.
Yes, this is a book told by dual narrators, one guy and one girl, and I like to describe this one as Titanic in space for your middle school and high school reader. It starts on the Icarus, which is the largest and most technologically advanced ship in the universe, and it's traveling across space in hyperdrive, and the ship is transporting valuable cargo, Lilac LaRue, who's the daughter of the richest man in the universe, and Tarver Marinson, a young war hero who was recently elevated to the rank of major. The unlikely pair is thrown together when the Icarus is violently pulled out of hyperdrive and the ship is ripped to pieces and crash lands on a planet. The two barely have time to get to an escape pod before the ship is destroyed. And survival dictates that they have to work together to get back to the wreckage of the Icarus to send out a distress signal. But they couldn't be more different, a rich debutante and a poor army major. But as they cross the foreign landscape, they learn to depend on each other and trust each other's strengths. And by the time they reach the Icarus, they're not so sure that they want to be rescued.
My goodness. Okay.
Ooh, ooh la la.
Yeah, These Broken Stars by Amy Kaufman. Mm-hmm. How'd you come across this book?
This one I read as a downloadable audiobook from the library. I was looking to see, I needed a new book and I wasn't at work. And so I was looking to see what I could get on my phone through our acoustic app. And this one was available and I just took a gamble and I loved it. It's a great audiobook.
Okay. We're talking about good books to read this summer for kids. Debbie McLeod, all from the Johnson County Public Library, our guest today. The Adventures of Beagle by Dan Santat.
Yes, and Dan was just here a couple of weeks ago with Dave Pilkey at Reading Reptile. And his style is very much a cartoonish style. This is a picture book, and it tells the story of Beagle. And he is from an island where imaginary friends are made. And every day, you know, one of his friends disappears because they've gone off to find their friend, or they've been picked by a child. And Beagle is still there, and he is tired of waiting for his child to find him. So he decides he's going to find his child himself. Mm-hmm. And so he leaves the island and goes to the big city and goes looking for his special friend. And I'm not going to tell you whether he finds his friend or not, but I think you can probably guess what the outcome is. But it's a really delightful little story. And it also shows, you know, take your fate into your own hands. Don't sometimes wait for it to happen. You know, do it. So.
Okay. And that's for preschoolers to grade two, The Adventures of Beagle by Dan Santat. Right? Okay. Our phone number here again for your recommendations, 816-235-2888. Dennis Ross, let's move on to Princess Academy by Shannon Hale.
Right. And this is Princess Academy number one, although as far as I can tell, there's only two at this point.
I think she's really... Yeah. Putting them out.
Shannon Hale writes a lot of books, and they're all really well received. And I really liked this one because it wasn't exactly like I thought it was going to be from the title. You know, Princess Academy sounds like, that's another one of those, I've read a million of these kind of stories.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't. It's about this girl named Miri, and Miri lives in a tiny little village on this mountain where for generations her ancestors have quarried stone. There's a special kind of stone that can only be found there.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it valuable. And they have simple lives. And then the word comes that the king's priests have divined that her small village is the home of the future princess. Whoever the prince is going to marry is going to come from this tiny little town. So, and in a year's time, he's going to come and choose a bride from among the eligible girls. So the king's ministers build this princess academy to take all these, you know, these uncouth mountain girls and teach them the ways of civilized society so they'll be, you know, appropriate choices for the prince when the time comes. So... So Miri is at the center of a lot of difficulty, competition among the girls, and homesickness, and bandits that raid the academy and have to, you know, they have to be rescued. And she's just a really very engaging character. She's smart and true to herself, and she discovers some unknown abilities that she didn't know she had that come in very handy. So you could call it a fantasy, but I found it very believable, and I found her a very engaging character. And I definitely want to continue the series.
That's Princess Academy number one by Shannon Hale, right? That's grades 6 through 12, you're suggesting.
Yeah, I think middle school and high school would like it both.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Kate McNair, let's turn to The Nazi Hunters, how a team of spies and survivors captured the world's most notorious Nazi by Neil Bascom. I assume this is nonfiction.
This is. So we're going to continue our nonfiction discussion.
That's okay with me.
This is great for your middle school or early high school student who maybe just finished a Holocaust unit and is interested in learning more. Mm-hmm. Not often do you hear the story of what happened to the Nazis after the Holocaust. And we all love a good spy movie with code names, safe houses, and shady political agents who will be disavowed if they are ever captured. And The Nazi Hunters is a real-life story of those who worked for years to bring Adolf Eichmann, the man who orchestrated the Nazis' final solution, to justice. After fleeing Germany, he saw the writing on the wall. Eichmann, under an assumed name and in disguise, fled to Argentina, which famously harbored many former Nazis. And about 16 years after World War II, Israeli agents discovered his location, and they hatched a plan to secret him out of the country, as it had no extradition treaty, back to Israel so that he would stand trial for his crimes. And it's got lots of great primary source material in here. There's pictures, there's maps. You can see the timings that they took to see how long it took him to get from his bus to his house in Argentina, so they'd know exactly where on the route they were going to snatch him and bring him into a van, and all their safe houses they had throughout the city in case one was compromised, they could move to another. It's a great adventure story, but it's also really wonderfully written, and it's a great historical story to read about.
That sounds good to me, too. Really, what a great story. The Nazi Hunters, How a Team of Spies and Survivors Captured the World's Most Notorious Nazi, by Neil Bascom, right? Okay. Back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Sherry from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Sherry.
How are you?
Well, thanks.
Hi. I have an 8-year-old, and he is just finishing up the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, which he loved. And I'm looking for some recommendations on the next series to get him involved in. I've kind of looked around, and I'm not really finding anything that seems similar. So I was wondering if y'all had some recommendations.
Post-Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Do you want something similar with lots of illustrations like that? Is that what you want, or something different?
He seems to be a little intimidated by too much tech.
Mm-hmm. Well, luckily, there are a lot of... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know that it needs to be that many pictures. And he likes the humor.
Mm-hmm. I think Big Nate series by Pierce, he would really like that. And there are a number of those, almost as many as Diary of Wimpy Kid.
Right.
And there's a new series.
I didn't hear you.
It's called Big Nate by Pierce. And there's another series that just came out.
Just one name, Pierce? Or
That's the last name.
Yeah, that's the last name.
We're missing the first name. Yeah, it's fine.
Right. And then there's another series that I've just became aware of is called Stick Dog. And I believe the author is Wagner. I'm not 100% sure, but if you go online, and it's about a boy, and he draws a stick dog on his note paper in school, and the dog has adventures. So, yeah, it's a little bit different because it's dealing with an animal rather than a kid, but it's the same concept.
Oh, he loves dogs, so that'd be perfect. Mm-hmm.
There are a number of series like that that followed.
I'm so sorry. I went through a bad spot. Can you tell me the first series that you said?
Big Nate.
Big Nate?
Big Nate. N-A-T-E.
That's like a lower level of reading, though.
It's about the same.
It's about the same as Wimpy Kid. There's also How to Train Your Dragon. Those were a lot of fun, and they have lots of illustrations.
Okay. Yes.
There's Wiley and Grandpa is a fun series.
Well, Sherry
Wiley
knows
her
Grandpa? Books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Sherry.
Have a good day.
816-235-2888. I guess you guys get these kinds of questions all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I like this. What about that?
Yeah, and we have lists actually online. If you go to jocolibrary.org and you click on Find a Good Book, we have read-alike lists that you can find there. So for all the big ones like Hunger Games and Twilight and Diary of a Wimpy Kid, so you can find a list of books that are available at our library. And lots of libraries do this, so you can probably find it at your library if you aren't a Johnson County resident.
Okay, let's go on here. Debbie McLeod, Meanwhile, Back at the Ranch is the title of the book by Ann Isaacs.
Yes, and this is a picture book, and it's a tall tale. Ann Isaacs likes writing her tall tales. And this tells the story of Tulip, and she's originally from England, and she's also recently a widow, and she's inherited $35 million. So she decides going to go to Texas because everything is bigger and better in Texas.
Not sure that's where I'd go, but that's one
for
person's
her,
opinion.
And this also
that's
takes
fine.
Place around, you know, in the late 1800s where I guess Texas had a good name and stuff.
Yes.
And so she goes there and she brings her help and she brings her pet tortoises and she you know, plants are garden. Of course, everything grows bigger in Texas. So, you know, the crops are huge. Her tortoises grow to be the size of, you know, that she can ride them. So everybody goes riding around on her tortoises. Well, 1,000 cowboys decide, I think I'd like to seek this woman's hand. And they all come to seek her hand in marriage.
Aww.
And just the dilemma that Tulip has with these men, and some of them aren't necessarily nice guys, and how she handles them. It's really a fun romp, a fun book to read. Kevin Hawk's illustrations are hilarious.
And how old do you have to be for this? This is little kids.
I would say, you know, four years old, preschool up to second grade.
Okay. Meanwhile, Back at the Ranch by Ann Isaacs. Okay. We're talking about good books for kids to read this summer during their summer breaks. Dennis Ross, let's move on to File Under 13 Suspicious Incidents by Lemony Snicket.
Yes, the infamous Lemony Snicket. This
yes.
is 13 short little mysteries being solved by a young Lemony Snicket. It's set in the same with the same characters in the same locale as some other books called All the Wrong Questions. He's got a new series where they're asking all the wrong questions.
Like, you know,
who could that be at this hour is the title of the first one. So these are 13 cases in this little town called Stained by the Sea where he is living. And in each one, the solution has been, for security reasons, put in a different section at the back of the book. So if you get to the end of each case, you need to guess what the solution was, and then you can turn to the section at the back of the book and see if you were right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of reminiscent of Donald Sobel's two-minute mysteries that were so popular for so long. You know, they all end with a little cliffhanger, and you have to go back to subfile B at the back of the book to find out. You know, it's the typical Snicket droll humor, you know, the snappy dialogue. And the cases are just difficult enough. I mean, they're not...
Mm-hmm.
They're not extremely difficult, but they're also not extremely easy. You really have to kind of think about each one. So it's kind of a little bit challenging.
Well, for a taste of that snappy dialogue, KCUR's Linda Scher is going to read us a little bit from File Under 13 Suspicious Incidents by Lemony Snicket.
Jackie's probably inside. Let's go. Let's go, we did. The brothers led me in a curve around the old man and then into a garage that felt like a birthday party for mechanical parts, with tires and bumpers drinking gasoline punch and stacks of tools and equipment nibbling on grease and talking together on the floor. There was no sign of Jackie or anyone else, but in the middle of the place was a car I recognized. "What's wrong with Cleo Knight's dilemma?" I asked. "Ms. Knight is an associate of mine, and her automobile has always been top of the line. You wouldn't believe some of the stunts that car has pulled." A figure rolled itself out from under the shiny automobile, and someone about my age sat up and nodded at all of us. "Even something top of the line bottoms out once in a while," the mechanic said. "She just needs a little tune-up, that's all. Is this the guy, brothers?"
"This is the guy," squeak squeaky.
Jackie gave me a quick, frowny glance. "He doesn't look so tough." "He's plenty tough," Pip said. "I need someone very tough," Jackie said. "Do you need someone who can hear what you say, even when he's standing right here?" I asked. Jackie gave me an apologetic smile.
"It's nothing personal," the mechanic said. "I just have some trouble on my hands."
"Trouble is like grease," I said, with a nod at Jackie's jumpsuit. "If you have it on you, you'll probably get it on everyone nearby." "Pip and Squeak said you're good in a jam," Jackie said. "Depends on the jam," I said. "They say you're brave." "Brave is what they call you until it doesn't work," I said. "Then they call you beaten. But you don't want to hear my story. You want to tell me yours."
That's another one from Lemony Snicket. That one's titled File Under 13 Suspicious Incidents. That's Linda Scher reading it for us. Such talented readers in our newsroom here. Let's scoot on here. Debbie McLeod, let's talk about Firefly July, A Year of Very Short Poems.
Yes, this is a collection of poems by Paul Janesco, who's done a number of collections and really well received. And the poems are illustrated by Melissa Sweet. And the poems and the illustrations together are just marvelous. The book is divided up into the four seasons, and they're very, very short poems. I mean, something that you know, maybe just four lines. That's it. Some of them a little bit longer, but it's a great intro to poetry, and it's just a delightful book.
Well, Stephen Steigman, our senior producer here at KCUR, is up to date. He'll read from Firefly July, A Year of Very Short Poems.
Thanks, Steve. This one is by Sid Corman. Daybreak reminds us the hills have arrived just in time to celebrate. Another one here by Gerald Jonas. It's called In Passing. Open-backed dumpty junk truck, stacked full of old floor fans, unplugged, unsteady, undone, free-whirling like kids' pinwheels in a last fresh breeze. What a way to go.
I like that.
Then there's one called A Happy Meeting. Rain meets dust, soft cinnamon kisses, quick, noisy courtship, then marriage, mud. That's by Joyce Sidman. Is that really for kids? And then this last one by Emily Dickinson. The moon was but a chin of gold a night or two ago, and now she turns her perfect face upon the world below.
My goodness. That's Stephen Steigman reading from Firefly July, A Year of Very Short Poems. Thank you, Stephen. Okay, I guess that sort of wraps it up. What a great list of stuff today. Good books for young kids. We'll put a list of all these recommendations up on our website, kcur.org. I want to thank Kate McNair, Dennis Ross, and Debbie McLeod, all from the Johnson County Public Library. Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
You guys. Always good to have you guys. It's a harbinger of summer when you guys are here.
It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming, guys.